Hey everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the We and Me podcast. This is Erica today. Thanks for joining us. On today's episode, we're going to be talking with a former NHL player. He is a two-time Stanley Cup winner. Daniel Carcillo, also known as Carbomb from the Chicago Blackhawks, agreed to come on today and discuss some of the different things that he personally has going on in his life, as well as what led to him becoming more of an advocate for NHL players who have TBI and who struggle with their mental health after they're off the ice. So thanks again for Daniel for coming on. We're going to go ahead and jump right into the episode. I was going to say, it's one reason why I was glad that you decided to come on, because I'm from Chicago, right? So I'm quite familiar with the Blackhawks. It was something that I've seen before many times from people who retire after any sort of athletic, whatever sport, or there's this massive gap of help after.
Right.
After that, I was looking and reading about a lot of the different things that you do, and I was like, well, this is like... It's an important conversation that just people aren't having, and definitely not having in the way that you do.
Yeah. So there's a bunch of different organizations online, and that want to say, you know, it's not one in five, it's five in five. I somewhat agree with that. I don't agree, like, as far as, I wasn't predisposed to mental illness, so my mental health complications were derived from not only transition and leaving the sport, because that's when it became really, really difficult, but from repetitive head trauma, you know, and I have a chemical imbalance. I don't have a neurological imbalance, and that was due to all of the hits that I've taken since, you know, professionally, yeah, they were harder, but, you know, I started hitting at age four, so it's just, it's been quite a journey, and, like, with Chapter 5, I talk about it a lot. I agree, like, mental health is all-encompassing because it's what you put in your body. Our gut health is directly linked to our brain health. And I think once you start understanding how your body works, and I was lucky enough to, you know, be a professional athlete and know, like, about my muscles and how my body works and my brain and my gut and all of that good stuff. So, I like having these conversations with different people and different podcasts, and not specific to hockey, you know. So, because I think all of this is a human issue, and I talk about it a lot, like, transition is a human issue, and it's hard for anybody to even finish university, and you were playing sports, and you think that you're going to go on, and you don't, you know, and so how do you repurpose your life? You know, I think a big part of it is self-discovery and who you are, away from your job, away from your sport, away from your ego. It'll be a good conversation.
I absolutely agree with that. I think that is so true and important. That's another reason why we also do. I say we sometimes because I live with DID. It's dissociative identity disorder. It's from...
Okay.
It's one reason why I find the brain fascinating, right? It's how trauma, physical, emotional, otherwise, impacts the brain. Because I think the brain is just vastly misunderstood still, even today. And there's so many different things that they do know, but they're learning more and more as they go. And I think that again speaks to a lot of what it is that you do, like. Because I've seen that how you talk about your brain and things after you're gone and stuff, and that you, unless I'm misunderstanding, but you want people to be able to study this and research it even after you're gone.
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean,
to continue,
like, the more people that donate their brain,
right?
Even if you don't think you have a neurological disease, and, like, because for me, like, I'm not convinced about CTE. I read every day, and there are new studies coming out every single day. And one of the main things you have to do is just know who you're reading it from. Because there's a lot of people out there and doctors that have these relationships and affiliations that cloud their bias, whether they want to admit it or not. It's psychology 101. The relationships you have apparently you know, inherently speak towards how you frame frame your medical research. And like, for example, they always tell doctors not to treat a family member.
Right.
Because whether they want to believe it or not, you're inherently going to be biased. Now, whether that's giving them the best treatment, not trying certain treatments because you know that they haven't worked on other people, but you don't know it could work on them.
Right.
You're inherently biased, right? So you just have to really understand who you're getting your information from. And I don't think people do that. I don't think people do that enough. And one of the biggest fights I have right now, like with the advocacy work that I do, not only about concussions, obviously that's number one for me, is like TBI, concussion, mental health awareness, and the mental health complications that can be brought on by repetitive head trauma. That's just because of my experience, my firsthand experience.
Right.
But also, like, make sure we know where we're getting this information from. Make sure we understand the relationships that the 40 doctors who make the consensus statements for return to play protocol after a concussion. I think people deserve to know that 30 of them have relationships and affiliations with three of the major collision sports: rugby, the NFL, and the NHL.
Absolutely.
So that's one of my biggest concerns right now is, you know, whether they want to admit it or not. And not, I think only like two of them actually directly get paid, but relationships inherently create bias. Whether we think they do or we think they don't, they do. You know, they do. That's been studied in psychology for years, decades.
Like the beginning.
So, yeah, exactly. So, yeah, it's, it'll be interesting to see, you know, who people listen to in the future, you know, because I'm just starting down this path.
Yeah.
And I can do that now because I've researched for 3.5 years and I continue to every day and I read medical studies and I know who the signatories are now and I know which names to look for. And if those names are present, which they usually are, then I just can't listen to them, you know. And a lot of those signatories are present on like the CTE research and on saying, you know, yeah, we don't know enough. And the fact of the matter is, like, CTE symptoms are the exact same as brain injury symptoms. And we know a lot. We have decades and decades of information since 1933
was
introduced in the medical literature about brain injuries.
Yep.
And brain damage. So just throw the whole argument that they try to make is like, oh, we don't know enough about CTE. Yeah, we don't. You're right. But we know enough about brain damage and brain injuries to err on the side of caution.
Absolutely. Yeah, there is absolutely enough research in that regard, because if you're talking about trauma to the brain, that is something that is vastly looked at and studied. And I think that the more and more that they continue putting research and money into this type of work, and then people like yourself who have this lived experience and you know who you were before and during and now after, and then the fact that you're missing, you have these I don't know how to define that, concussive gaps based in like the head traumas that you've dealt with. Now it's impacting your memory and has been. And that doesn't, that continues. That's a growing problem.
Yeah. And I think like, so the treatment that I've been lucky enough, like, and I say I'm lucky, man, like, I am blessed like to go through what I've gone through. Cause I'm in a position now where I can help so many people and not just people with repetitive head trauma.
Right.
Like, this type of treatment that I've received can help people with mental illness.
Very much so.
Can help people who are trying to get off of drugs. It can help everybody, you know, and it can help people with mental health issues and complications that they don't understand, you know. And so then we move into, like, anxiety, depression, suicidal ideation, and especially for people that aren't predisposed to these types of mental health issues. Suicidal ideation is a big deal, you know, and it's,
absolutely.
I've had the thoughts of killing myself to further brain research, you know,
mm-hmm.
and that's I'm not afraid to say that because that's where a lot of our minds go, and a lot of our thoughts tend to go there when people don't have hope, when people don't know where to turn to, when people don't have any more drugs to try, when people don't have any more alternative treatments to try, right? That suicide to me is a means to an end. It's a means to no more suffering and no more pain because I don't have another door to open. And so, like, what I do in Chapter 5 and what I'm doing now in my life is, number one, making sure I'm healthy enough so that I can help people and so that I can be present for my family. And then number two, making sure people understand that there are hundreds and thousands of treatments out there.
Yeah.
And there's not one cure-all, you know? Like,
right.
So for me, what helps save my life is functional neurology. And it doesn't work for everybody. It just doesn't. But it works for a lot of people. And so, like, I lead with that because it saved my life. I don't like to talk about something I don't know or something that I haven't experienced. And that saved my life. Building new neurological pathways around my dead neurons, identifying which parts of my brain are shut down, saved my life. And that could help people on these drugs, on these antidepressants. You know, I don't talk about it a lot because it's, I get enough flack and push back because people don't understand and recognize the signs and symptoms of traumatic brain injury, and then they don't know, like, where to move into as far as diagnosis and care.
Sure.
But this type of treatment can work. It can work for you. It can work for somebody that has been predisposed to anxiety or crippling depression their whole life. I know it can, you know, because it's been proven.
I've been seeing some of that. Yeah, I've been seeing some of that research. It's very, very interesting, and it really is promising. I know a couple people, actually, who have been who have PTSD and depression, anxiety, and they've been moving towards being able to have that made available to them because their insurance either doesn't work with it, it's not available in their area, all of these different red tape things. But they, I know one person who has had it done now has been doing it a few sessions, I think. I'm not sure how you would state that, but a few sessions. And they've just been noticing a difference, they said.
Yeah. I mean, like, so think about it, right? We have these areas of our brain where we house depression, where we house anxiety, right? And
yeah.
Usually in our frontal lobes. And for me, like, I was right brain injured and right frontal lobe. Like, they was shut down. You know, and I had a lot of depression and insomnia, and I couldn't problem solve, and my personality was changed, and my impulse control issues, and, you know, my lower, part of that's my lower right cortex. But, I mean, as soon as I went in, and as soon as they identified those two areas in my brain that were literally shut down, like my skull, I have a depression on the right side of my skull, in my frontal lobe.
Oh, wow.
Because dead neurons secrete chemicals that kill other neurons.
Yep.
And until we figure out which part of our brain is doing that to us and build those new neurological pathways, and for me, again, I wasn't predisposed. It's not a neurological imbalance. For me, it's a chemical imbalance.
Right.
And as soon as I identified it and I got that working again, and then I went to get the Moxa acupuncture in my temples, in my skull, in my spine, in my neck, everything started to regenerate. And now, like, it's starting to be filled out. I'm looking at it right now in the rearview mirror. Like, it's starting to fill out. And I have before and after pictures. It's just, it's really, really interesting stuff. And all of this stuff, for me, I had an opiate addiction. And I don't, personally, I just don't like taking pills, you know. And for me, and but pills help people even just get out of bed. And so I am not anti-pill. But for me, I need to move forward with treatments that, are alternative, you know, and that
sure.
are holistic in nature. You know, that's what works for me.
Right, and I absolutely can understand that. And again, the DID complicates certain things because that's, you know, the dissociative identity disorder. Due to severe trauma in early childhood, developmental years, you don't form a whole, complete self and identity. It's split up and fractured. And with that, though, that's why I find the brain so fascinating and all of these different things that you're talking about, right? Because you're talking about the brain itself. But with psychologists and psychology, they study the mind, right? And there seems to be this disconnect where they forget that they're also working with the brain. Like these things are one and the same, and they're expressed and studied differently, but a lot of these different doctors need to kind of come together and refocus some of these different things so they can better understand people who have varying degrees of traumatic brain injuries, for example.
Yeah, I mean, so like the doctors I work with are usually the outliers, and they're not welcomed by the medical community.
Right.
Medicine in general, like if you can't read it in a book and you don't wait 30 years to practice it, then you're not doing it right. I don't agree with that. All of this stuff is at our fingertips right now. Mm-hmm. You know, it's there in the literature. And we have now like amazing men and women who are researching this literature.
Yes.
And they don't need new studies because they had this right back in 1940. They did.
They did.
You know, their descriptions of traumatic brain injury are bang on. So these people now, like endocrinologists, I'm going to work with an endocrinologist who is, his name is Mark Ford, and
interesting.
He's going to check my hormones.
Yeah, interesting.
You know, and that's one thing that I hadn't even thought about, you know, and like for me, my whole world revolved around making new neurological pathways because that's just what worked for me.
Sure.
And then now I'm thinking like, wow, okay, that makes a lot of sense because with repetitive head trauma, one of our brain neck glands or whatever you want to call it, mm-hmm. shut down, or your pituitary gland and your brainstem. And those
right.
are two major glands and organs glands that operate and control the chemicals that the brainstem going into our spine. And the pituitary gland operates our hormone levels and what we're naturally creating, what our God-given natural makeup creates. And if that's hurt, if those areas are hurt, which they usually are after repetitive head trauma, we need to look at them. And sometimes it's as simple as, for men, getting natural testosterone because our testosterone's low.
Right,
and that
yeah.
will help some men's depression and anxiety dissipate without drugs.
Yeah, I think I'm a firm believer in whatever it is that you can find that works for you, do that thing.
No doubt. I'm the same way.
I'm
the exact same way.
I am right there, yeah, because you're talking about so trying to find what works for you, dealing with addiction, and so you don't want to take certain pills. I can very, very much understand that because I've dealt with much of the same. There are a lot of different medications that I won't take because I know that it'll set off previous problems that I've dealt with. And I'm just
right.
not willing to do that when I know it causes a problem for me.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean I don't want something to happen or I don't want something to work. I will continue trying to find what works for me, the individual.
Of course. Of course. And like, so for example, like reflexology really works for me when I'm stressed or anxious and I haven't had treatment in 7 days and it's $20 and I can go get reflexology, you know, and that helps me. It helps with my anxiety and my stress levels, you know, but some people don't like people touching their feet. So
right.
What do you do? Well, there's right. another way to do it. Even if you don't have $20, you get a lacrosse ball and you roll on the bottom of your foot,
mm-hmm.
either sitting down or standing up. And then if that doesn't work for you or it's not deep enough and you like, you know, deep tissue stuff, you get a golf ball. You know, so like whenever I'm talking about this stuff, it's always tiered, right? Because
yeah.
some people can't afford the treatment, and I get that. You know, and so,
mm-hmm.
but there's so many things that we can do that you don't need to have a gym membership. You don't need to go to the reflexologist, right? You don't need that stuff. You can go for a walk. You can cut your grass. You can go for a workout. You can do 20 push-ups. You know, just change that moment, that mindset in that moment, and then come back and assess how you feel. Breathing exercises, you know, like, so
mm-hmm.
there's always something that we can do. I'm a firm believer in that. There's always, always, always something that we can do.
Absolutely. Talking a little bit about that, It's so true. Like this, I say this to people all the time. There is always something in that moment. If you're stuck in that suicidal ideation, realize and recognize it's a moment. It's not life. It's a moment of life. It's a big difference. And understanding the differences there, differentiating between the two. And I know it's very hard when you're stuck in those moments and stuff, but you have to keep pushing and utilize different things that you learn, different things that you read about and hear about. Try them.
Yeah, like, I have a toolbox, right? Mm-hmm. And I've got a lot of tools in there because I have those tools because I read and I listen with my two ears. I have one mouth for a reason. I listen more than I talk, you know?
I like that.
I gain knowledge, and that's not original to me. I heard that somewhere, right? Everything I'm talking to you about, not me. It's not... I've learned this and I've applied it to my life because it works for me, you know? And like, so one of the most life-changing things that ever happened to me was when I was 25 and I found spirituality and rehab and getting off the opiates was The Joy of Living by Yonggi Myungyo Rinpoche. It's a book that just teaches you about your brain and about mainly about meditation, and that everybody thinks you have to sit up straight in a chair with your hands on your knees and meditate for 30 minutes or else you're not doing it right. Well, you can meditate on sound, you can meditate on smell, you can meditate on what you see. Wow.
That's right.
The grass is really green today, right? Like, that's you staying in the moment and not thinking, oh my gosh, what do I have to do today? Oh, tonight, this, oh my God, the meeting is going to be so... No, right? So, like, it taught me, number one, sitting in silence and observing my mind. I have a crazy mind, and my mind is super stimulated just because of the job I did, but that's me,
right?
And that's my makeup, and if I fight it, then it'll get worse, and if I accept it, and I observe my thoughts, and I don't put an emotion to every thought, then I'm okay, you know, and it's tiring to put an emotion to every single thought, because on average, we have between 20,000 to 50,000 thoughts a day, depending on who you are. And, like, how are you going to put an emotion to those thoughts? Like, so as soon as you realize, you sit down for, like, 5 minutes, and you're kind of taking, the way I learned, somebody told me when you're meditating, you take snapshots of your thought, and then you let it go. So, for example, if you have a strawberry that you're thinking about, you just take a snapshot, you observe it, and then you let it go. And then you're going to see another, somebody running, you know. But if you find yourself taking a snapshot of the strawberry, and then you're like, wait a minute, where'd that strawberry come from? Did it come from an orchard? I wonder where the orchard was. What does it taste like? That's the overthinking.
Oh, my God, right?
So just observing our mind, and that book just changed my life. And it actually, it teaches you a lot about your brain makeup. It's actually really informative.
I'll have to look it up. Who was the author again? You said The Joy of Living?
Yeah, The Joy of Living, and his name is Yonggi Myungyo Rinpoche. He's a monk.
I'm writing it down so I can look it up.
Yeah,
because that sounds really interesting to me, because that's a lot of what I try and do, because I also live with OCD, so the intrusive thoughts piece of OCD is a real big complication for me, because what you just described, a strawberry, I can see a strawberry, and then I will go to its origins, the origin of the color red, the chemical compound of red paint, and then I'll be stuck on the periodic table, and from there I'll go to oxygen, and then hot air balloons, and then it just continues. It's madness.
But
the snapshot piece, I like that.
It sounds like you already know that about yourself. Well, how do we use that? Then it's like, how do we use that as a weapon?
Right.
Like, how do I use my anxiety or depression as a weapon?
Yeah.
And I do. You know, like, I had a phone call earlier today. I have two other ones before I get to Sarnia here, and then I have that meeting tonight. And, like, so...
Yeah.
I like being busy. You know, and I like talking to different people. I have to finish the Lancet medical journal article that came out 2 days ago. And so there's just a bunch of things that I like to plan out, and I write it in my daily planner because I like to see it.
Me too.
And then you know, I move forward. So it doesn't have to be, I don't look at my mental health complications anymore as an ailment. I look at them as my strengths, you know, and mm-hmm. I use them to my advantage.
Yes.
The best I can. It's, you know, some days, like, it's not all good days and it's not all bad days, right?
No, of course not.
If it's all bad days, that's not normal. If it's all good days, that is not normal.
Right.
Good and bad days are normal, you know?
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah, that's, I really like the way you put these things. Really quick, just so, because I know that our listeners will have questions. So really quick, audience, for everybody listening right now, CTE, chronic traumatic encephalopathy, just so everybody is aware, and TBI is traumatic brain injury. I just wanted to clarify that for people listening, just because most people are familiar with TBI, but not necessarily CTE.
And then there's concussion. So, like, you'll always hear, if you follow me, concussion, TBI, CTE, and concussion is, so concussion, the difference between those three terms is concussion are the symptoms, okay, mm-hmm. of how traumatic brain injury is diagnosed. Concussion are the symptoms, and the TBI, moderate, okay, it's a scale, mild traumatic brain injury, which are the most common, moderate traumatic brain injury, which is in the middle, and then severe or catastrophic traumatic brain injury happens when we lose consciousness. And traumatic brain injuries, okay, are the event. It's the actual shearing of white and gray matter in our brain when our brain is a rapid deceleration or hit from the side, a crank of the brain stem, and that's your brain moving around in your rigid skull and shearing. That's the actual event. And then CTE, chronic traumatic encephalopathy is really new, you know. And
yeah,
I always say this: I don't have CTE symptoms. I have brain injury symptoms, and that's it. You know,
right.
People have lived long and fulfilling life with stage one, stage two CTE, and some forms of dementia. And
oh, very much
so. So it doesn't mean you're going to die from CTE. It doesn't mean that, you know? And so I move forward in this life that, you know, my higher power gave me a certain amount of brain capacity. I know from the treatments I've had that I can create more. And I've changed my diet. I'm looking at my hormones. I have a lot of hope for the future. And I have a purpose, you know, and my purpose is to be healthy enough that I can provide for my family and take care of them and then help other people.
That's really fantastic, though, that you're taking these different experiences, however you would define it. People call them adverse experiences or however. But you're taking that and you're utilizing it for the benefit of yourself, your family, but also to advocate for other people who are really doing it, going through it right now. Like a lot of, I was just curious, so I looked it up, and a lot of our local schools, because I no longer live in Chicago, I live in Indiana now, but a lot of our local schools, they have junior hockey leagues. So now I'm thinking about it, I'm like, all right, well, how many of these kids are going to need to find your information in the future, like to find out the research, to benefit from the research that you're working on facilitating?
I think a lot. And then take it a step further. Let's talk about the veteran community. Let's talk about firefighters, police officers, first responders, women of domestic violence, child abuse victims. You know, like there are like, and then like, we'll take it even a step further because everybody's like, hey, Dan, have you looked at PBR, like the bull riding? I didn't even think about that.
Yeah.
Have you looked at diving? No, I haven't. I didn't even think about that.
Right.
Have you looked at, I find myself going to all these events. And like, so for example, we went to Monster Jam the other day and I'm like, holy crap. I'm like, you know, these things are, these trucks are just bouncing. And I'm just like, wow, I wonder what their protocol is.
Right.
That is
such an interesting point. It really is because like so when I was younger, I got myself and my little brother tickets to a monster truck rally. It was out in like Rosemont or something like that. And for his birthday, I got him tickets to a monster truck show. And it never occurred to me, but what you're talking, they actually get paid for car accidents. Like,
yeah.
Their sport, if you'd like, and you want to define it, is extreme car accident driving. Like,
yeah, and flipping them, right?
When's and the biggest flipping year them, yeah.
Like, yeah, the last. And so, and then it goes back to my other point where helmets do not protect against brain injuries. They just don't.
No, they do not.
They can't. You know, so, you know, I know that they racing IndyCar, NASCAR, their neck is is stable, right? So you don't get that brain stem or the, but I mean, it's, I'd be remiss to say that they're better protected. I mean, I know that IndyCar has way better, I think the most advanced protocols on the earth as far as taking care of their drivers, because they do a functional baseline, and then they use the iPass system where you can't cheat it. Eye movement.
Yeah.
Brain health is diagnosed through the eyes. And that's one of the tools that the Carrick Institute, the functional neurologists who saved my life, have used in the Plasticity Brain Center. And they use that as a diagnostic tool to check your vestibular, ocular, and affect system.
That's fantastic. Yeah.
And you can't cheat it. Like the impact test. You can cheat that.
You can cheat that
impact test all day long. And guys do it. I did it, you know.
Right.
And so IndyCar has the baseline, the iPass for the beginning, for the baseline, the functional baselines. And then they take it a step further by putting accelerometers in the driver's ears. So it's connected to the baseline program. And if they get hit, it'll immediately alert that system that he has a brain injury and he needs to get out of the car based on the G's. So, like, I mean,
wow,
that should be, crazy, right? And that should be in every hockey player's ear, in every football player's ear or mouth guard. You know, I know that I've seen a couple companies try to come out with that, but I'm in talks right now with Northwestern and their nanotechnology to hopefully develop something like that, you know, because you can't really put it in the helmet, you know, because guys don't wear their chin strap tight enough and properly.
Right.
Helmets move more than the brain, and so it needs to be attached into the body somehow.
Right. That would need to be in the body somehow. That is fascinating. I am so looking forward to hearing more about that in the future, and if Northwestern, like, starts to push forward with that with you, because nanotech, like, that's something that not a lot of people are familiar with, and that it's still, I would still call that much newer science.
Yeah.
But it can make such a huge difference. Yeah.
Yeah, no doubt. And it's linked to the key to that is a functional baseline.
Right.
Right?
Right. That's absolutely. Yeah.
A baseline that you cannot cheat. Just can't. They're balance tests and eye tests, and you can't cheat it.
No, that would be...
But in saying that, guess what that costs?
Right.
It costs money.
Lots and lots of money.
Sports leagues are all about money.
Right? Yeah.
It's still called sports medicine for a reason, because the doctors that make the consensus statements and the doctors that are testing you and making these protocols are serving the sport. It's called sports medicine for a reason.
All yes. Right?
When it changes to athlete medicine, then I think parents can feel comfortable enough to watch their kid and cheer for their kid in the NHL, the AHL, East Coast League, and or the NFL, PBR, Monster Jam, whatever.
Right.
You know, until then, my kids will not be participating in any of those sports, because as a parent, my job is to keep them safe, secure, and make them feel loved. And
right.
I would be remiss to say that they would be safe and secure playing collision sports without these measures being taken.
Yeah, and I don't think it's people talk about, like, I've seen people tweet you, I've seen other things posted in that and talk about how some of these things that you talk about are extreme. I don't think wanting players and athletes that you claim to love have safety. I don't think safety protocols is extreme. How is that an extreme view? I don't understand
that. So, I say this, okay? having healthy human beings playing a sport that people love and that they digest, they ingest that entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
Fans should care about, number one, how these guys are cared for, and number two, where they go after they're done.
Right.
All right. And then I say this, it works on three different levels. If you provide proper athlete medicine and proper care, diagnosis, understanding for these guys in collision sports, then what happens is, number one, the human being is less susceptible to injury, and they don't leave the game with a chemical imbalance on their brain that they don't understand, and mental health issues that they don't understand.
Right.
Number two, how does that work for the fans? Well, what are you talking about, Dan? Well, the fan gets to see an optimized athlete,
mm-hmm.
and better hand-eye coordination and better processing speeds, right? Like, everybody was freaking out when Sidney Crosby was knocking out bumps out of midair. Well,
mm-hmm.
Sidney Crosby does a vision training program, right? And a protocol. We have six different muscles in our eyes. He trains those, right? And then number three, less man games lost for the owners and GMs. So they save money, and that's all they care about, right?
Right.
So everybody wins. One, two, three.
I don't, maybe I just have a different understanding, but like, that makes perfect sense to me. I don't understand the disconnect for people, like why some of these owners aren't wanting to do this. And because, right, you're, so as an athlete, I don't mean this offensively, but as an athlete too, like owners and coaches and different things like that, maybe not as much the coaches, but you're a commodity. You're,
uh-huh.
you're bought, traded, sold, you know, it, you're a commodity.
Oh, yeah.
Your skill set is what they pay for.
Yep.
And you know, with
why
the,
why wouldn't you want to have that person like optimized?
You know, right. Why wouldn't you put money? Yeah.
I compare it to a car.
Right.
Right. Like, you have four flat tires.
Right.
You know, pump up one of those tires. Does the car drive very far? Like, why wouldn't you want to have your athlete with four full tires at the right PSI so you can cruise down the highway at a fast speed?
Exactly.
You know? And win the race. So number one, like, people fear what they don't understand, and I truly believe that the
yeah.
owners, number one, they're liars. You can see
yeah.
that from the depositions of Jeremy Jacobs and Phil Anschutz.
Yes.
Saying they've never heard the word CTE.
They never heard. I saw that in some of my, when I was doing a little bit of research recently, I saw that. Yeah, that was unbelievable.
So they lie.
They lie.
Yeah.
Right.
And they lie under oath.
Yeah.
That's important to note, right? That's important to note.
It is.
And they know that in this cap system, there's a younger, hungrier, dumber kid coming up
yeah.
who will take the place, right?
Yeah.
So that's just how it is. And they're just so blinded by success and fame and money
mm-hmm.
that they... And it's not the kid's fault, because they're not getting a proper understanding of the risk involved in doing
right.
that job. So until that happens, until, like, what I'm doing next in the next month is taking a camera into a dementia clinic.
Oh.
And I'm going to interview dementia patients, and I'm going to show people what early onset dementia looks like, and I'm going to interview the family members. And that's the type of education that these guys need, because if you get three or more traumatic brain injuries, well, you are 80% more susceptible to early onset dementia, Alzheimer's, and Parkinson's.
Yes. Yes, I've seen those statistics. Yes.
You know,
this is serious. Like,
not a lot of guys know that, you know. So.
Right, and that is, I mean, it's hard, because I'm with you on that. It's hard to blame the kid who has, like, you know, their dream in front of them, right? Because you're talking, you know, the NHL would be the goal, and then from there, the Stanley Cup, kind of the goal, right?
Well, and that's why it's so important that you have the NHL take the lead.
But
right?
they need to, it, yes.
As far as, like, proper understanding, diagnosis, and care.
Yes.
But I know how it is, and I know why those 40 doctors, I know why their protocols are so lax. You know, if you have kids sitting out for long periods of time and their health happens, we educate parents. Guess what happens? Parents are not going to sign their children up for their sport. No
yeah.
chance in hell.
No chance.
Could you imagine, like, if hockey and football didn't exist today, okay? And somebody thought up the game of football and hockey today. In this, like, social media world where everything's scrutinized and it's a softer world. And
yeah.
Could you imagine that? Could you imagine the uproar? Wait a minute. You're gonna let men lead with their head just to try to get a football over a line?
Right.
And then you're going to let men skate around at 35 miles an hour and kids, and it's legal to put your shoulder into their chest as hard as they can when they have a little rubber puck. And, like, that just doesn't sound like anything anybody would be interested in. You know?
Right.
Like, not me.
And you know, in like, the NHL, you're encouraging them to fight each other?
Oh, like, sorry, yeah. There's
what?
Also another element.
Right.
There's bare knuckle boxing in the NHL. And you can hit somebody with your bare knuckle. And that doesn't exist anywhere other than indoor lacrosse.
Right.
And the bare knuckle fighting championship or bare knuckle fighting league. I saw it on the TV the other day.
Yeah.
Boxing has gloves, you know. Like,
boxing has gloves.
It causes a lot of damage.
It does.
A lot of damage.
It really does. And no, you're right. I hadn't thought about it in those terms, like what would occur. I mean, social media, there would be this massive uproar. Like people would be comparing it to like ancient Rome and gladiators and forcing people to fight in the middle of a ring to the death.
Because people still do, right? Like that's what
right.
football is. And that's essentially what hockey's becoming.
Yeah.
Especially now that they're the last league to... You know, to admit that link. Like, think about it. Soccer's admitted it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Baseball's admitted it. This is the last collision sports league. Rugby's admitted it.
Mm-hmm.
These guys are the last guys. I just, personally, I don't think they can sustain what's coming.
I don't think so. No, I
you
agree.
Know? Like, they are spending so much money on damage control.
Yep.
Eventually, they're going to crumble. Like, there's no way. Mark my word, there is no way that Steve Monitor's case, when it goes to trial, gets past a week or even 4 days. I personally don't think that. I don't. I'm a critical witness in that case. There's no way they're going to let me get up on the stand.
I don't think, yeah.
If they do, they're really, 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 really dumb.
Yeah, I can't imagine.
And I was beside him every single day.
Right.
And there's emails, and there's ultimatums of the emails, and there's no way. There's no way.
No,
you know?
There's just
and
no
if there
way.
Is, if there is, bless me. God has blessed me because I get to continue with my advocacy work for the next at least 4 years. You know, like I implemented a 5-year plan when I started 8 months, almost 10 months ago with this social media. Like everybody thinks I'm just popping off, but there's a plan.
Right.
It's a very strategic plan. And behind the scenes, it's a poker game. You don't show your hand. You know, there's a lot going on. And
right.
I just don't think they're going to be able to sustain the pressure that's coming.
No, and I think that's good, though, because these changes clearly need to happen. You're talking about, like, basic safety. This isn't something that's like overly complex that a layperson can't understand. Don't hit someone in the head. Don't encourage people to hit each other in the head. This isn't complex. Yep. And if you do, like the NHL is doing, then you have to be prepared for the repercussions of those actions and be prepared to make those systematic changes that are necessary.
And stop selling the game with fights. And
right.
Stop selling the game with rivalries. And everybody's like, well, they don't do that anymore. No, they do.
No, they do.
When I look at my Twitter feed and it says Red Wings versus the Blackhawks,
yeah.
That's what it shows. It's a picture of two guys fighting. So
always.
I take a snapshot of that.
Yep.
They do. They continue to sell it on that because they know that their fan base, their major fan base, it's not the people that enjoy those silly celebrations that are awesome in Carolina. It's the true, like, tried and true hockey fans from Canada and Alberta and,
yeah.
like, Toronto and, like, those people that just love seeing men going at it.
Yep.
You know? And that's the reality. And until they make a shift, the game of hockey is amazing. Like, the rules need to change, but the game of hockey as it stands right now in field and look at Toronto's team. Like, these young kids, it's amazing. But there's certain things that I think need to happen. And, you know, I think they should make the rinks bigger. The guys are faster. The equipment's lighter.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot more accidental hits, you know?
Yeah.
But again, all these things go to what? Loss of money and revenue because you're taking seats out, and then they got to change all their rinks. There ain't no chance they're going to do that.
No, uh-uh. No, that I wouldn't hold my breath on.
Yeah.
So I have a question, though. So if, let's say in 5 years, these changes are being implemented. I've seen a lot of different, I've seen you take a lot of flack when you talk about how you wouldn't let your children play hockey. If these changes are implemented, like if the safety protocols are there, if Northwestern, for example, if some of this nanotechnology that is already implemented in NASCAR, if some of these things come to the NHL, the NFL, whatever the case may be, would that be like, okay, we did it?
No.
Like, we've done this?
No.
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 Okay.
No, my kids are not touching collision sports.
Okay. No, and I'm just wondering. Yeah, that was just more so a curiosity, and then just something I thought would be interesting to hear your take on.
I just can't put them at
that great a risk.
The way I feel today and the money I've spent to try to get my quality of life back.
Yeah.
No, I just can't put them at that risk. And I always say this, when they're 13 years old, when they're a teenager, 13, they can make their own decision. But at that point, it's a strategic plan because there ain't no 13-year-old making pro sports, you know?
Right, yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. No, and that's totally understandable. Again, I was just wondering, as your point of view as a parent who was, you know, a former NHL player.
Yeah.
Especially in who you were as a player. Because I know a lot of people, I see you get flack a lot for that, so I was just curious.
Yeah, I mean, I played the game very hard, and that was a role that was sold, actively sold by the NHL.
Mm-hmm.
And I lined up rock and sock and tapes, put them in a VHS, and pretended I was sick from school, and lined them all up and watched them.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to do that, you know, and I did it, but I did it to a detriment to my own health, because they withheld pertinent information about proper education and understanding of the risks that I was under.
Right.
And that's why I fight. You know, that's why I fight. You know, and I will hold these people accountable, and they won't get away with it. And I'll make this information available to everybody. You know, not just...
Right.
Like, seriously, I know we've talked about hockey a lot, but at the end of the day, I could care less about what they do with rule changes. And the only reason I talk about this stuff is because I'm worried for parents, I'm worried for kids, and I'm worried for my friends who still play.
Who still play,
you know? But, like,
yeah.
At the end of the day, like, I know they're not going to do this stuff, you know, but...
Yeah.
It's also, like, it shines a glimpse onto what, you know, what athlete medicine could be like, you know, and it could be really cool, it could be really awesome, like, when you treat the human being before you treat the sport, you know,
it could
be, I think, you know... Amazing. Like, so for example, I have a video coming out that I'm editing right now from the University of Cincinnati football. They've cut their concussion rate by 80%, not over 1 year, not over 2 years, over 9 years, the last 9 years.
Oh, okay.
80%. So on average, NCAA football has 10 concussions. They have 2.
Wow.
For 2 years, they had 0. And it's a vision training program,
wow.
You know? And so, like, when we talk about preventing concussions, that's what I'm moving into next.
Yeah.
You know, not only functional baselines, identifying it with the accelerometers, but let's prevent them.
Preventing
let's
it to begin with.
Peripheral. Yeah, let's increase our peripherals. The worst type of hit or a traumatic brain injury we could get is the one we don't see coming.
Think
about a car accident where you just get tapped and you're just sitting at a red light. Why does that affect people so much? Well, they don't have a chance to tense up their neck muscles and protect themselves.
Right.
You know, so, there's a lot of really cool stuff out there. And there's a lot of stuff that I'm going to try to implement in some different leagues. I'm not going to tell you which league because it needs to be implemented secretly. And then we need to collect data. And then we need to show that data.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we'll go from there. So.
No, that's fantastic. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to hearing more about some of these different things that you have going on, as well as what you're doing, you said, next month with the dementia patients. These are just important conversations to have. I'm all about having important conversations, regardless of how difficult or uncomfortable they may be for someone or all parties. It's important to have that.
Yeah, I mean, I think those are the most important ones to have.
Agreed.
When it makes people uncomfortable.
Yeah.
You know, because that's how you enact change. I mean,
yep.
nothing is, you know, enacting change is difficult because, number one, it makes people uncomfortable. They really don't want to hear it. Like, do you think that I was excited when I got sober enough to assess the state of my brain and I had a one-year-old child? Like, that is not easy to do.
No. My God, of course not.
You know, and so, like, you know, you just keep putting this stuff out there. The people that want it will grab it and search for it.
Yeah.
And the people that don't will fight you, but I'm not here for those people. Like, sometimes on social media, I don't give people a free pass just because I have a blue check mark. If you want to say something to me that's offensive or rude, I probably will answer you. You know?
Yeah, I've seen.
I'm learning more and more to, like, conserve my energy and make sure that I'm, you know, moving forward and addressing the people that want to be addressed.
Right.
You know, and staying in the realm of positivity. But I'd be remiss and I'd be really silly to think that that I can't speak to everybody. And if you are rude, like usually now, it's usually from people with fake accounts, and that's what trolls are.
Yeah.
People that use fake accounts, they don't use their real name, and they're evil, and they're trash-talking people. And I just mute, and I block them.
Yep.
You know, some days I don't have the power, and I want to engage, you know, because, hey, I am a fighter at heart, and I like it, you know. So, but I'm just making sure I conserve my energy, and I'm putting them into, you know, all of the stuff that I just described to you.
Right. And that's good. Yeah, that's good. Because, no, I'm right there with you. Sometimes we can't prevent ourselves from, you know what, not today. Today is just the wrong day. Today I'm particularly agitated, and today I don't feel like being positive. So you just came at me for no reason. I'm going to show you why I have a very, very big vocabulary.
and we're human. Like, I think that's what everybody forgets is, like, even though you're advocating and doing an amazing job with what you do on social media,
thank you.
I mean, we're human beings.
Right.
You know, and, like, I make mistakes on the daily.
Of course.
And, you know, that's where I learn the most, you know, and that's where I have learned the most is when I suffer and when I make mistakes. You know, I've learned the most about myself in those moments, you know. So I don't mind continuing to do that as long as it's not malicious and it doesn't intentionally hurt somebody else.
Right. You know? Yeah, I'm right there with you on that. Yeah. I really appreciate you talking with us. We're coming to the end of the episode here, everybody, so I'm really sorry. But can you share just a little bit more about your Chapter 5 Foundation for everyone?
Yeah, so Chapter 5 is essentially a transition program. I think we're going to tweak the mission statement a little bit here moving forward, where we encompass not only hockey players, but everybody, because like I said before, transition is a human issue. And transition, I think, number one, like for what I'm doing, is about our mental health and our overall health. And the answer isn't to get somebody a job, right? And that'll take away your mental health complications. So the first thing we do is assess if you need any type of help, whether that's body, mind, spirit, soul. And then we move forward with, like, self-discovery, who you are away from what job you did, how we get you to repurpose your life so that you lead a purposeful life. And then, you know, we talk to family members. We talk to guys about NHL guys specifically about big stressors like understanding insurance. And so, yeah, it's an informal process. Nobody makes a salary. And all of the money donated goes towards, we're building internal programming right now. We're building a virtual online locker room. And we're editing videos, we're putting out treatments for videos, and I personally, out of my pocket, pay for those treatments. That doesn't come out of Chapter 5, but the reason we continue to raise money is, you know, editing videos and posting and websites, they cost money to build.
Yeah.
And forward in that manner with helping as many people as we can.
That's so fantastic. I just wanted to make sure that everybody out there was aware of that too. And I'll post all of Dan's links down below, everyone, just so you know. Is there any upcoming projects that we haven't discussed that you'd like to share with our listeners?
Just continuing to move forward with research. This upcoming Wednesday, I'm going to Mount Sinai and meeting with a couple doctors who are the head of the brain bank there, because they're not affiliated with any collision sports leagues. So again, just continuing to make relationships and build and make partnerships that are innately going to help people.
That's really fantastic. I'm really looking forward to continuing to follow you and have our little side chats on Twitter.
Yeah, and we'll, like you said before, I'd love to update you once some of this stuff comes to fruition. And
absolutely, yeah, please do.
No problem doing that.
Please do. Yeah. That would be fantastic. Once again, everybody, this was Daniel Carcillo, and I will post all of his links down below in the description box. Thanks again for coming on, Dan. We really appreciate it.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
It's replay.